because we don't necessarily see or hear these detainees very often, we can sometimes forget that they're experiencing their own outbreaks and own hardships with dealing with the coronavirus pandemic.
Welcome back to Hyphenated America, where we make immigration laws and policies easier to understand. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Maria.
This week, we'll be discussing detention centers, who stays at such centers, conditions before the coronavirus pandemic, and the current outbreaks occurring across the country.
Later on in the episode, I spoke to reporter and fellow Laredo, Texas resident Maria Mendez from Texas Public Radio, who reported on outbreaks in Laredo detention centers.
The definition of what an immigration detention center actually is something that a lot of people get confused about or can't pinpoint. So let's make it clear. What is an immigration detention center?
A definition of immigrant detention that I think is simple and easy to understand came from the Detention Watch Network. They define it as the practice of incarcerating immigrants while they await a determination of their immigration status or potential deportation. These immigrants are people that are both documented and undocumented. Some are recent arrivals to the country that are seeking refuge from countries plagued by poverty and violence, while others have been in the country for even decades and are awaiting removal.
There are currently over 200 immigration detention centers across the United States and tens of thousands of immigrants in detention. So let's talk about it. Who runs and manages these facilities? There are a lot of key players at the management level of immigration detention facilities. The government agencies in charge of management are Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the Office of Refugee Resettlement. However, given the exponential increase in the immigrant detention population in the last few decades, government agencies have contracted private for-profit corporations to run a good chunk of these facilities.
Yeah, you're exactly right. In a recent report by Freedom for Immigrants, which is a nonprofit focused on immigrant rights, they found that over 70% of immigrants are in privately run detention centers. GEO Group and CoreCivic are the two largest of these private companies that specialize in immigrant detention. For context, in 2017, GEO and CoreCivic received $985 million in their contracts with ICE.
What are the conditions of a typical detention center? If ICE is giving these corporations so much money, are the facilities and conditions within them top-notch and up to adequate health and living standards?
It's actually quite the opposite. In the last few years, detention centers have been infamous for their inadequate and substandard conditions for migrants. A report released by the Inspector General of DHS in January 2019 found a lack of medical care, mental health observation, and severe overcrowding in the facilities. A report that came out later that summer also found rampant neglect with regards to food, water, and sanitation.
So what is happening in immigration detention centers now with regards to the coronavirus pandemic, as the country is not seen to slow in the spread and containment of the virus?
That's a great question, because there's actually a large disconnect between what ICE and private operators of immigrant detention centers are saying and what immigrants themselves, as well as journalists and advocates speaking about the immigrant experience the past few months, have said. Does ICE have any protocols related to COVID-19 currently?
You know, ICE has announced that they will continue to conduct arrests and removal proceedings amid the pandemic. They've made some vague statements about following CDC protocol, but have not explicitly required testing for detainees at all or on any regular basis. Since most detention centers are privately operated, oversight and enforcement of health protocols is extremely limited.
So do we know what actually is happening with regards to cases and conduct by immigrant detention officials? I recently read a report by the American Immigration Council that included a quote by a San Francisco ICE field officer in charge of many detention centers who was hesitant to test those in ICE custody for COVID-19 because he thought that they would not have enough space to isolate all those who might test positive.
There have been widespread reports by the Washington Post, Texas Public Radio, and other local media outlets which have found the following phenomena in detention centers across the country. Detention center employees not wearing PPE, overcrowding and lack of social distancing, transfer of migrants between different facilities, and a reluctance to test migrants in detention, as you mentioned.
According to the most recent statistics provided by ICE, which was updated on August 20th, there are a total of 1,085 active cases of COVID-19 and 4,743 total reported cases. According to the most recent statistics provided by ICE, which was last updated on August 20th, there are a total of 1,085 cases of COVID-19 and 4,743 total reported cases. According to their dashboard, there have been 23,964 detainees tested, which puts the infection rate at exactly 20%, which is extremely striking and troubling.
One of our listeners actually asked, where are these outbreaks happening? And the five immigration detention centers where we've seen the largest number of active cases are Farmville Detention Center in Virginia, Rio Grande Detention Center, Webb Detention Center, Mesa Verde ICE Processing Center, and Chase County Detention Center. There's actually a hunger strike in Mesa Verde that just started this weekend to protest lack of adequate health protocols.
They aren't the only ones protesting the conditions faced by immigrants in detention right now. There's been a widespread movement known as #FreeThemAll, organized by doctors, nurses, activists, legal professionals, and other concerned community members, which has called on the release of immigrants from detention centers on the grounds of preventing the spread of coronavirus. As Sophia and I just discussed, there are a lot of outbreaks of COVID-19 in immigration detention centers all around the country. Two of the top five are actually in my hometown of Laredo, Texas. One is the Webb County Detention Center, and the other is the Rio Grande Detention Center. I first found this out through a really compelling article written by reporter Maria Mendez of Texas Public Radio, where she discussed the cases, how the local health officials were mandating a quarantine and testing of all detainees, and how desperate families are to get their family members out in fear of them contracting COVID-19. So I decided to reach out to Maria and do a deep dive into what's going on in Laredo and other immigration detention centers, what we can do to spread awareness on what's going on, and just get a better picture of what's going on the ground. So I'm so thankful that she came on. A little bit about Maria Mendez. Maria is a border reporter for Texas Public Radio and covers issues of immigration and business on the U.S.-Mexico border in my hometown of Laredo, Texas. Maria has currently written stories on Texas Public Radio on Laredo's border closures, DACA recipients in Texas, Customs and Border Protection's nearly $300 million contract to build the border wall in Laredo, and as I mentioned, she wrote a really important story on the outbreak of COVID in the detention centers here. I hope you enjoy the conversation.
Hi, Maria. Thank you so much for coming on to our podcast at Hyphenated America.
Thank you for having me.
Last weekend, you tweeted out that there were a total of 17 active cases of COVID-19 in Laredo's Webb County Detention Center and almost 300 active cases at the Rio Grande Detention Center. As a border journalist, why was it important for you to report these numbers?
Yeah, I've been trying to, at least tweet out updates that we get from the city of Laredo on the detention centers here, because I feel like, these populations are especially vulnerable since, they're confined in spaces that aren't made to socially distance and they don't really have the option to just leave or, they don't have all the resources that people like myself do have, to safely live their lives during this pandemic in our homes. And so I really have been trying to just, keep people informed about what's happening there, because we don't necessarily see or hear these detainees very often. We can sometimes forget that they're experiencing their own outbreaks and own hardships with dealing with the coronavirus pandemic.
Definitely. I feel like if your normal citizen is having a hard time, I can't even imagine for those people in these confined conditions. So who exactly reports this data? I think the one that you tweeted out was data from ICE. When did they start reporting it? I can imagine that the detention centers are privately owned. They might not be required to. So I'd love to know more about how the data of actual cases is reported and when that started.
Yeah, so the data has been tricky because, like you said, these are privately operated detention centers. And so the companies themselves haven't necessarily been advertising that they're having issues with outbreaks. But ICE has been reporting cases and instances of COVID-19 among its detainees, who are immigrants. But the interesting thing is that
The Rio Grande Detention Center isn't only used by ICE, it's also used by another federal agency, the U.S. Marshals. And so basically, there are both immigrants and U.S. citizens in the detention center. Some of the U.S. citizens that I spoke to were there for things like parole violations and were just waiting sentencing or further court review, but they were there for months. And so that has made tracking cases a little bit difficult because on the one hand, ICE has been, you could say, pretty transparent reporting cases among its detainees. But again, that's only for immigrants in their custody. And the U.S. Marshals hasn't necessarily been as transparent. When I asked them about what was happening there, they did give me numbers, but they don't proactively post those numbers or cases on their website like ICE actually does. And so a lot of the reporters here in Laredo have had to really rely on the city of Laredo, which has weekly or has multiple media briefings every week. And our local health authority here has been giving reports on these cases where he's kind of just been counting and sharing with us, you know, the total counts. He's kind of been sharing with us the total counts of how many cases and deaths are occurring in these detention centers. But again, it's been kind of like figuring out a puzzle of like, okay, ICE is reporting this and the city of Laredo is reporting this. So out of what the city of Laredo says, you know, this must be the number of immigrants that are sick. And so the rest, you know, are potentially U.S. Marshal detainees or probably. And so it's been a lot of like, just like trying to confirm things.
Doing some quick math and seeing like, okay, which cases weren't reported. It's exactly. Interesting, though, that the reporters here would have to rely on local officials rather than, you know, like the federal ones, like you mentioned with like the U.S. Marshals, because there is no like system set up for like you said, weekly updates of like, because, you know, those cases can vary from 1 week to the other so much if there's an outbreak with someone there and then, you know, the cases could multiply.
It's been interesting as well because, you know, we've really been, like I said, we've been really relying on the city for information and they've been pretty proactive and transparent themselves. But, you know, they also, it seems like they don't know everything that's going on either. And so it's been a lot of like just asking questions to a lot of different people.
And that's interesting how it can vary so much from city to city. I'd say that Laredo has kind of done a good job and they've been really proactive about COVID. But I can see how if there are other cities, that it's kind of scary how we're only getting this information because Laredo is willing to give it. But I'm thinking about like other cities in the valley, like McAllen, Edinburgh, Roma, who there are also detention centers around there. Like if their local officials don't want to give that data, we kind of don't get it. It's just interesting how we just depend so much on local officials and, you know, the uncertainty that comes with that.
Yeah, I think we've been very lucky that the city of Laredo has been pretty transparent. And I would hope that, you know, other cities are taking a similar approach, but it can vary. You know, officials aren't necessarily, you know, they're not obligated to give us this information, although, you know, reporters can always push back and like try to submit public information requests and stuff like that. But that's like a longer and very arduous process sometimes.
Great. Well, I'm glad that Laredo has given you guys some information so we can have a good picture as to how many immigrants are sick, as you mentioned. Kind of to following up on what you mentioned on the privately owned corporations, I found it fascinating that you mentioned in your story for Texas Public Radio that GEO Group, which operates a federal detention facility in Laredo, denied allegations of detainees being denied COVID tests and face masks. How much power do the private owners of these centers have right now? Are they allowed to not administer COVID tests as required by Laredo's health department?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, you know, because in trying to find out, you know, what exactly is happening in these detention centers, like I mentioned, it's been kind of a game of just like questioning different people about like, you know, who's in control and who manages this different stuff. And that's still part of the puzzle. That's still a part of the puzzle that I think I personally, and I think other reporters are still trying to figure out. But it seems like, you know, the city of Laredo put the detention centers, including the Rio Grande Detention Center, under quarantine. And part of that order actually mandates testing of all detainees and employees. What I was hearing from talking to detainees and their relatives was that at the Rio Grande Detention Center, detainees were asking for COVID-19 tests, but they weren't getting them, or they were being told things like, well, we're not going to test you unless you have respiratory issues or you have a fever, things like that. And so You know, I tried asking the city, you know, what was happening with that. And they ended up just kind of saying that the detention center was working on getting tests, but that there was a delay in them getting approval. I asked them, you know, so who's in charge of this? You know, who is the one that hasn't given that approval? And they never really got back to me on that. But eventually, they did tell us reporters that the detention center finally started testing or conducting, you know, mass testing as opposed to just doing very few tests on detainees a few weeks ago. And sure enough, then that's when they started reporting these really high case counts of like 300 infections and like 200 active ones. And so I think the big issue was that if DO, the company, is the one that is in charge of testing, they for some reason had a delay in actually getting tests, but they weren't responsive to my questions. And like I said, so I had to just keep asking the city of Laredo for updates on that.
Interesting. Because GEO doesn't necessarily have to respond to you, right? Because they're a private corporation and they can essentially do whatever they want, right?
I mean, for the most part, yeah. And they did respond to my questions, but it was mostly just a statement, you know, that addressed other concerns, but they didn't address questions about testing at all.
I had actually read that ICE was starting to mandate required testing in certain detention centers. Have you heard anything about that there being a federal kind of ordinance on testing detention centers, or does it vary, like in Laredo, where the health department's the one requiring it?
Yeah, I think ICE has started requiring testing of at least all of its new detainees. And so any person that they take in into a detention center or a family residential center, which is basically a detention center for families, they started testing them. So that is a thing, but I'm not sure, again, I'm not sure what the case is for example, the U.S. Marshals, which is another federal agency that hasn't necessarily been as proactive in communicating its COVID-19 safety precautions. And so here in Laredo, I think who was really pushing the testing was the city of Laredo because, you know, they put the detention center under quarantine precisely because there was an outbreak and an issue. And again, that quarantine order includes a mandate to test detainees.
Tell me about your conversations with family members of detainees at Rio Grande Detention Center, where there is this large COVID outbreak, as you mentioned. I was so moved by the way you wrote about this in your story and the large amount of urgency and concern their family members seem to have on getting their family members out before they get sick or before there's another outbreak.
Yeah, so I started asking around local immigrant groups and also some national ones to see what they were hearing or seeing. And I wasn't necessarily successful, but then a group of families of detainees reached out to me and then they shared my phone number. And so I became flooded with calls and emails from relatives or detainees themselves about the conditions there. And it was very difficult to see and listen. It was truly heartbreaking because they all pretty much were saying that they were concerned about, you know, their safety, their health, and, you know, potentially dying in these detention centers because of the outbreaks they were seeing. A few of the detainees that I spoke with said that they actually saw other detainees who seemed to be sick with COVID-19 and would just lay in their bunk beds or on the floor for days, not being able to get up. And one of them told me that one particular detainee wasn't taken out of the cell, you know, because until he requested it because, you know, the detainee looked really sick. And there was actually a death of a detainee who was discharged and later died at a local hospital. And I think that's part of what prompted the city to put the detention center under quarantine. And so I think, you know, I haven't been able to confirm it, but I think detainees probably witnessed whoever ended up dying, they witnessed them being really sick. So they were, you know, terribly afraid that they were being exposed and that, you know, that they themselves, you know, would be catching COVID-19. And so that's why they were asking for tests. But again, a lot of them were being told that, They couldn't get tested unless they had a fever or respiratory issues. One detainee that I spoke with said that he remembers like sweating and having chills. So he says he was pretty sure that he had some sort of fever, but that they only really ended up just giving him, you know, pain medicine or allergy medicine. And then another thing is that a lot of detainees also mentioned that they were concerned because they got some face masks from the detention center, but a lot of them said that they had to reuse them pretty often. And although the detention center says that they provide face masks at least 3 times per week and even more frequently if a detainee requests it, but that's not what I heard from a lot of detainees. And so basically, detainees were just sharing these experiences of not being able to like properly socially distance and take care of themselves and, you know, not having the option to leave because, again, a lot of them are waiting for court dates and those have been pushed back or postponed because of the pandemic. And so a lot of families and detainees are just desperate, you know, because they're stuck in the situation where they don't really have control over their safety and they're at the hands of the detention center or judges or the federal agencies that they're under custody.
That's a great description, I think, of the tragedy of what's going on here is they have no autonomy on what's going on. And I just keep thinking about we already knew that the conditions were so bad even before this pandemic and the overcrowding and the lack of resources. And it seems like that's just so exacerbated now. Whereas, like you said, a lot of detention centers just aren't giving them the proper care that they need. So that's really concerning.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for other stories, I've also spoken to doctors and, you know, I covered this one protest in Dili, outside of a family residential center, which again is basically a detention center for families. And doctors there told me that, you know, there's a history of outbreaks of different, you know, diseases that we already had before COVID-19 at detention centers. And so, like you said, a lot of these detention centers were already seeing issues and health concerns. And with this especially contagious virus that we have today and are still figuring out how to deal with, you know, it's especially concerning.
I didn't mention this one, but if you feel like you can answer it, we'll include it. But how do you think that we can hold our local officials accountable? These detainees are given the adequate care. Do you think that's even possible, given that there's not a lot of transparency? What can your local citizen, like I am of Laredo, do to, you know, push them to give them the care that they need?
That's a good question. And I don't know that I have, you know, the best answer. And, you know,
like, it's just what you think based off of like what you've the dynamics you've seen in Laredo. It seems like the health department's kind of like our best bet here.
I think it's important to keep up with the news, you know, as sad as it can be, I think it's important to keep up with the news and stay informed on what's happening in this detention centers and using our power, you know, because again, a lot of these detainees are pretty much powerless where they are, but we're outside. We can safely social distance in our homes and have more resources to call our elected officials, you know, and ask them questions or even just press them on, hey, there's an issue at these detention centers. Can we do something to address this? I think, again, just using our power that we have to bring more attention to this because, again, with these detainees being in detention centers, we don't necessarily get to hear from them very often and they can't always vocalize, you know, what they're experiencing and what they're concerned about. And so I think it's up to reporters like myself and also citizens or residents in different cities to amplify their voices from the information that we do get, whether that's, you know, through journalism, you know, through reports, or through some of the information that we get from elected officials. And I think always continuing to ask for more information and ask, you know, those questions that journalists do ask, for example, like who's in charge of these detention centers and why is there a backlog and or a delay in testing? I think, you know, just doing things like that. And of course, voting and being aware of our privilege and our power can really help us shed light on what's happening in these detention centers.
Well, thank you so much for your part in shedding light on what's going on. I think you definitely exemplify the actions we should take, and so touching that you've spoken with family members and have pressed GEO and ICE and local officials to report this data. So thank you so much for contributing to that transparency and giving us the awareness on what's going on.
Thank you for taking interest. Like I said, it's been hard to report this, you know, because as a journalist, you also can't necessarily offer or do as much as, you know, you wish you could do sometimes. And so I'm glad that my work is still somehow contributing and helping these detainees and, you know, the public to stay informed about what's happening.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Maria, for coming on. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
And that's the episode.
Thank you to Maria Mendez for joining us. Don't forget to check out our website, hyphenatedamerica.org, to access our guides, fact sheets, and weekly breakdown of immigration news. And don't forget to follow us on social media.
If you have immigration-related topics that you're interested in us breaking down with the help of experts, feel free to email us at team@hyphenatedamerica.org.